Well, his self-censoring clearly isn't working, so you might as well just listen. Here's Gruber.
All right, so there's a Fishermen's Association suing dozens of energy producers for damages they claim come from climate change. Just keep in mind, if the Ice Age hadn't ended, all of these places would still be frozen. They wouldn't be fishing at all. Just keep that in mind. Todd Shepard here, a staff writer for the Washington Free Beacon, joining me to discuss. Todd, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well, by the way. We're probably going to go steelhead fishing here probably in the next 7 days because the steelhead run is going great in Michigan. Big fish, by the way. And you know what would be happening if there wasn't global warming? The Great Lakes would still, well, they wouldn't even exist because glaciers dug them out. And the water wouldn't be flowing because it'd be one big chunk of ice, because about 9 or 10,000 years ago where I'm sitting was under about a half a mile of ice. So global warming's been a very good thing for me and for Michigan and, well, for the whole country, actually. But what about this fishermen's organization?
Right. Well, you know, I guess the background starts just, you know, they sued in November of last year. The background starts about a year before that. That's when we started to see the municipalities like San Francisco, Oakland, they sued the energy producers, you know, saying, basically asking the courts to demand that they create an abatement fund that would help them pay for damages the city alleges they are suffering because of climate change. So then the Fishermen's Association got in the game as well in November. I've been covering this for, you know, pretty much the last, I don't know, 14 to 16 months. And it sort of dawned on me the other day. I just wondered what the Fishermen's Association has done maybe to make the world a little bit greener on of their own account. And so I emailed and texted those questions to the Fishermen's Association many times. And I'm sure you are probably not surprised by this, but I never got a response.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. You know, I know it's kind of a fun story to say, you know, what are you doing and to not get the response. But when you read the complaint, this is what I really find interesting. When you read the complaint they filed against the energy producers, you really do get a sense that they at least have this conception that if you believe global warming is caused by the burning of fossil fuels, then it's a two-step process, right? The producers make it, and then the consumers consume it. And so it would seem to imply that again, if you believe the theory that there's more than just one person or one entity responsible for the climate change that would be happening. So, and in the article I wrote for the Free Beacon, I think we put in some information in there that really shows the interdependency. And again, you will not be surprised at this, but the interdependency between fishing, commercial fishing, and fossil fuels. So, for example, think back to 2013. That's pretty much when gas and diesel prices were at their big spike through the Obama years.
Sure.
I linked to a story in the UK Daily Mail that says, oh, my goodness, your fish and chips are about 50% because diesel prices are so high. So it just shows you that getting that fish, you know, being able to harvest enough fish to have a market, to get that fish to market and everything else, very dependent on fossil fuels and all of the conveniences that brings into our lives.
Yeah, let me ask you this. If you're, say, you're working in British Columbia or Alaska, you're running a 60-foot limit seiner, and you're pulling crab pods, and you're pulling prawn pods, you're running big diesel engines, and you're running big power supplies to get those hooks and those systems to pull the crab pods off the bottom, which are really powerful, running off a separate diesel engine, pumping all of that out, right? I mean, plus, not to mention, you're putting a discharge into the ocean, probably, and you're probably polluting the world and so on and so forth. So, yes, there are consumers, which are the fishermen themselves.
Right. And, you know, so let me give you yet another small little piece of background, and you do it what you will. If you want to put puzzle pieces together, you are warmly invited to do so. For a couple of years now, there's been this campaign called Exxon New. It's big on Twitter, and the deal here is these activists, they claim they have documents that show Exxon New about global warming as far back as the mid-70s, but they covered it up and they put out propaganda to convince the public otherwise. And so they're suing over that as well. And they make it analogous to the tobacco lawsuits of the 1990s. So the gentleman that is now the leader and the spokesperson for the Fishermen's Association, he was once the communications director for a congressman who was one of the vocal leaders of the Exxon New campaign. So it might be that there are a couple of political entities with the Fishermen's Association who might have more of a political agenda than maybe even some of their membership. I've seen that often in my reporting career with oil and gas associations, where the members are really just going about their business and the leadership decides to go off on some political bent that the members never even really approved.
I see that happen in unions a lot, not far from where I live. That happens all the time, doesn't it?
That's what a great example, completely.
Yeah. Union members are going about their business, you know, building cars or putting in electrical lines or whatever they're doing, and next thing you know, their leaders are out there pontificating about things that they're like, I don't agree with that, and they're shocked.
Trying to make political points that they didn't ask their membership about, and their membership really are that they're apathetic or they're uncaring about.
Or they're uninformed. They don't even know.
Yes. Well, completely well said, yes.
Yeah, or they don't even know. All right, so you got this Fishermen's Association raising a stink while their boats are out there churning away, you know, with 1,000 horsepower diesel engines or more. I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, the 60-foot limit sander, for example, I mean, that takes a lot of horsepower to push out across the Pacific Ocean. You know, but maybe in the future we can just have a train that goes out there, you know, and we can just fish from the train, right? Wouldn't that make sense?
Well, maybe we can reinvigorate the old arts of sailing, of just, you know, a 12-sail schooner, and, you know, we can take our I don't know, 12-person crew and maybe triple that to 36. Of course, that will impact the price of the fish in the market as well.
Well, you know, there's another problem out there that they failed to understand. There's this other thing, not just fishing boats. We have these things that, in the Midwest, especially, we call them tractors. And these things that are called tractors actually go out to things that we call fields, and they plow these fields, and they plant seeds, and they grow food. But they use fossil fuels to do all of these things. It's a crazy notion, these things called tractors. And there's this company from Moline, Illinois, called John Deere, that's been around for a long time, that transformed the world because they created more food than ever was thought possible. And they do it now with more production, less energy, less acreage than has ever been done, and they produce more food than the history of mankind. Isn't that incredible, Todd? I'm gonna give you the last word.
Well, here's the one thing I'll say that I think the fishermen have over the farmers is the animal that they harvest does not have a flatulence rate that puts at risk.
Wait a second. How do you know that? You're guessing that fish don't fart. Come on now. Maybe they do. Maybe the bubble. Maybe it's the Shrek. The Shrek factor where the bubbles come to the top of the pool. Come on now.
Okay, you're right. I'm guessing on that. That's a pure guess.
It's the Shrek factor. I think I've created a new term here, Todd. You can take that and use it anywhere you want. Greatly appreciate you being here. Todd Shepherd from the Washington Free Beacon. And this is the place for free thinking and free thought, the Steve Guru Show. Todd, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great weekend. Oh, good Lord. Flatulent fish, the next big problem on the Green New Deal. Flatulent fish destroying the planet. Where else would you hear about that but on this program, The Steve Gruber Show?
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over. Until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
The National Guard for me was a perfect fit. I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. I didn't find that in the normal day-to-day life. I didn't find that working behind a desk. I realized being hands-on and being a soldier was something that would keep me active, keep me outside, keep me in that team environment that I craved and that I needed so much. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake. I wanted to be in Boise, Idaho. I wanted to be home. The National Guard gave me the opportunity to stay right where I was, serve my country and my community, and it was the best of both worlds. I grew up flying bush planes in Alaska with my dad. I was fortunate enough to get my pilot's license. I wanted to be in helicopters. I wanted to be a crew chief. The Army National Guard gave me a chance to fly helicopters now instead of fixed-wing aircraft.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Michigan Army National Guard. Aired by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters and this station.